Underestimating rising inflation can lead to, guess what? Even higher inflation. You're listening to SDPB's In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. The most recent consumer price index shows prices have risen at their fastest pace since May 2023. The war in Iran, which began in February, is driving inflation and price pressures. Macroeconomist Joe Santos says the central bank must consider raising the interest rates in order to meet the moment. Joe Santos is director and professor of economics in the Ness School of Management and Economics at South Dakota State University, where he leads the Dykhouse Program in Money, Banking, and Regulation. I connected with him in SDPB's Janine Basinger studio on the campus of SDSU.
The last time we talked about how oil price shocks and so forth would likely reveal themselves in the form of higher overall inflation, and that the Fed would have to deal with that. And one of the prevailing arguments is that the Fed could, as the expression goes, look through the price spikes. Because if they have the credibility, everybody understands that the jump in prices is temporary and the Fed needn't, say, raise rates in order to respond to the burst, let's call it, of inflation. That argument is sound, but it relies on an assumption that expected inflation, what the public reasons the path of inflation is likely to be going forward, is anchored. Right. And so that is to say, if you ask the public about their thoughts on inflation, anchored would sound like a response, you know, to the effect of, I think inflation will remain at or near 2% for this foreseeable future. Those are anchored expectations. And if that's the response you get from the public, you're OK to just look through the, say, oil price shock. If instead the public were to say something like, oh, I don't know, it could be 4, it could be 6, it could be 8, I'm not sure what to think anymore, right? Mm-hmm. That's what unanchored expectations would sound like. And in that case, the appropriate policy response would be to tighten, raise interest rates at any sight of a burst of inflation, no matter how short-lived anybody reasons it to be. Because if expectations are unanchored, the Fed's credibility is on the line. And so to re-anchor those expectations, the Fed must act decisively and, you know, in a way that demonstrates that they're willing to impose certain pain on the economy to stabilize inflation expectations.
When we say the public expectations, mm-hmm. Do we mean we're calling them up and doing a poll, or do we mean we're looking at how certain people are investing? How do you measure public expectations? Help me understand that.
Yep. And this is the reason for the new post, is that all of this talk is around the anchoring proposition. Yeah. And so, you know, any listener would be forgiven for thinking, okay, Joe, Lori, what is expected inflation right now? And spoiler alert, it's not observable. So we don't have any definitive sense of what true expected inflation is. We can only rely on estimates. And so to your question, what sorts of estimates do we rely on? Well, there are two general types. There's the survey, and then there's what we think of as market-based estimates. And economists generally, policymakers, even pundits, tend to favor or at least go to first the market-based measures. And what we mean by market-based measures is we look into the financial markets and we take a look at yields or think interest rates that clear these markets for different types of bonds, and I can go into some detail, and from that infer what the market must be thinking, what the public must be thinking about inflation, because they're trading a certain way and that way will reflect their feelings, we reason. Whereas surveys, there's just no cost of being, say, irrational. You can say anything you want and there's no consequence. So they're not as disciplined, the responses aren't, as the market responses. So two types, market-based and survey. The reality is, of course, we refer to both. But I think the important thing to note is that when you ask an economist that question, you know, so what are expected inflation? What is expected inflation? Where most folks will go is to a market-based measure. As a first pass, and that's what everybody seems to be doing now as well, and I get it, but the punchline is that there are reasons to suspect that these market-based measures are likely underestimating the true, unobservable levels of expected inflation.
You mentioned a second ago, 8%. That is not a number that you're just pulling out of fantasy land in the charts on your Monday Macro Substack. 8% was a real thing immediately following the pandemic.
That's right. Depending on how you measure it, or in some ways, it doesn't matter how you measure it, inflation expectations, well, inflation jumped for sure to those sorts of numbers. And depending on the measure of expected inflation you used, it jumped at least for a time as well. Again, but it depends on the measure you use. But yes, the actual level of inflation, no question, spiked dramatically. And that's important because that's a circumstance that had not occurred prior to that point, certainly not in recent history. And so I think it's reasonable to wonder if that had some sort of persistent effect on how the market thinks about inflation into the future. And I would argue it did. I would also argue that it probably had some effect on our ability to accurately measure. Again, I keep emphasizing the unobservable true expected inflation.
Let's talk about some of the ways that we measure from the market-based measurements, the difference between treasury bonds and treasury securities or TIPS.
Yep.
This is all new to me, so start from the, the beginning. Why do we care about those two things?
Yeah, so this is a really interesting kind of empirical burst of luck, and that is there happened to be two classes, general classes of treasury bonds that trade out there. The first we refer to as nominal bonds, and it's what you were thinking the first time you heard anyone say bond. It's the one you know of well. You buy the bond, and then the issuer of the bond, the United States Treasury, in all of these discussions today, pays you some fixed payment. So you get back $100. You know exactly when you're going to get that back, and it's going to be $100. That's a standard old school nominal bond. Mm-hmm. The alternative approach is a treasury inflation protected security that didn't always exist, but exists now. And that's a bond where, same thing, you buy the bond, you are promised payments, you get your money back in the future, but the payments are adjusted for inflation. So here's the point. The difference between interest rates that buyers of these bonds demand on one versus the other is a reflection to a large extent of what the market thinks inflation is going to be. Because if I, for example, demand 6% on the nominal bond, where I am exposed to inflation because there's no cost of living adjustment or anything to the payments, and 4% on the bond where there are adjustments, the difference between 6 and 4, 2%, is presumably the market's sense of what inflation is likely to be. And that's why folks buying the old school traditional nominal bonds are protecting themselves by adding another 2% to their interest rate. So you can compare these two rates, and what you get is not expected inflation, but it's something that is sort of the foundation of expected inflation, something we call break-even inflation. It's a way to think about the building blocks of what the market must be expecting. So I show this on the blog. You can show the yields or the interest rates you get if you buy, you know, the five-year traditional bond, the interest rate you get if you buy the inflation-protected bond, also 5 years. Compare the two. That difference is what we refer to as a break-even inflation rate. And it's where you start, typically, when you try to construct a measure of expected inflation.
So do I understand this correctly, or point out where I'm wrong? If I'm a regular investor and I call my financial planner and I'm like, you know, I have no idea where this inflation thing is going to go, the part of my portfolio that is investing in treasury bonds, I want to make sure I'm investing in those treasury inflation protected securities. And then my financial advisor does that or advises me to do that. And then we measure that and say, hey, this is a lot of people are feeling insecure about inflation. Am I on the right track?
You are. There's you doing that. And then there's like a million other people also saying to their advisor, buy the traditional bond that doesn't protect me. And the reason both of you could exist and be well-informed and sensible about your decisions is because of the difference between the two interest rates. Mm-hmm. You're going to earn a slightly lower one because mm-hmm. your payments are going to be adjusted for inflation. The other buyer of that other bond, the conventional bond that doesn't adjust for inflation, is going to earn a higher rate to compensate her for the fact that the bond doesn't adjust for inflation. So the difference between the two, if you know all of you folks who are talking to your financial planners are well-informed, rational, sensible, and so on, it averages out that if both of those bonds exist, they are both sellable. It must be the case that the difference in the yields compensates for what most folks imagine inflation is going to be. So that's the sort of approach. And it's that measure, that market-based measure, which is based on this differential of rates, that really governs the way we think about expected inflation. And again, I'm arguing in the blog that there are reasons to think that that measure, that market-based measure, as good as it is, as much as we like it and all the rest, is probably understating what's going on really in our heads.
So we are probably underestimating inflation again and again, since the pandemic at least.
Right, right. So much individuals are probably getting it right, but what we end up seeing in these market-based measures understates it. And so when I'm the monetary policymaker and you know, I get up in the morning and my first thing I do is I check whether inflation expectations are anchored. I go to these market-based measures, and if they're understating the true expected inflation, I walk away with a false sense of confidence and I say, you see, they're anchored. They're expecting something around, you know, two. And in reality, perhaps that's not the case, but my measure is biased downward. And again, we can explain why I reason this, but that's the rub, is market-based measures since the pandemic seem to me to be underestimating what's really going on in people's heads. So it's not a formation problem. People are probably doing the right thing in terms of formulating expectations, but we, the folks who are trying to measure what they're thinking, are probably getting it wrong in a particular direction over and over and over again.
And what are the consequences of that mistake?
Good. The consequences are that the central banker checks her monitor that morning, sees the measure that says that folks are expecting, you know, a lower rate than they really are, and walks away confidently thinking, we're doing a good job as central bankers. Expected inflation is anchored. We could just look through this oil price shock. We don't need to raise rates the way Joe said to, you know, re-establish our credibility and so on. We're credible. Expected inflation is low and stable. When meanwhile, they're looking at an estimate of an unobservable thing that is probably higher.
Yeah. So to be clear, Joe is still over here saying, hey, Fed, you really should raise interest rates.
I think, yes, yes, I am still saying, hey, Fed, you ought to raise interest rates. And don't essentially take solace in these measures, these market-based measures of expected inflation, because they're probably sending the wrong signal in one direction, and that is critically that expected inflation is lower than the true unobservable value mm-hmm. is. So expected inflation.
It may be unanchored.
It leads to higher inflation, and they have this sense of confidence from a measure that is imperfect.
We're not done yet with inflation. We're not done with the war in Iran. We're not done with the oil shock. And we're not done talking about rising inflation rates.
That's right. And I think if you listen to comments that certain Fed officials are making and try to listen for the differences over the last several weeks and maybe months, I think you're starting to notice that sensitivity to just what you said, to a sort of longer lasting, more persistent inflation that they, the central bankers, are going to have to address with higher rates.
You can find the companion blog for Monday Macro on Joe Santos's Substack. Go to Substack and search for Joseph M. Santos, or go to this post on sdpb.org/in the moment and link directly to Joe's Substack. That's our conversation for today. We hope that it served you from all of us here at SDPB. I'm Lori Walsh. Thanks for listening.